Blog Talk Radio.
We have a very special episode today on Sportsaholics 24/7. I'm John. I'm joined here with my co-host, Brandon.
And
like many of you might have heard, we're very honored to have the one and only Nets Cowbell guy on today. How are you doing, Cowbell guy?
Very good.
And we're going to be doing probably about a 20-minute interview with him. And obviously, like always, we want you to call in. The number is 347-884-8496. I've already received a few texts about people going to call in some debate questions for Cowbell Guy. So let's get this started. Cowbell Guy, so how'd you get your start?
Sometime during the first year in Newark, I felt like the arena wasn't fully loud enough, and you know, I wanted to try to develop more of an identity, and I actually started more of a baseball thing because I got a cowbell, you know, for a couple of Brooklyn Cyclones games, and you know, I started doing it at Net games, you know, and I really enjoyed it. You know, a lot of fans said it brought something, you know, some more energy to the place, especially during those losing seasons. I guess I always had respected Eddie Boyson, the Mets cowbell man, and I knew Freddie Schumann. Freddie says, personally, I used to work as a security guard at my synagogue in the summer, and he used to go to the senior center at the synagogue, so I knew him personally.
All right, and is it true, I think I heard something, that at the Barclays Center you're not allowed to bring a cowbell?
It's true, however, let's just say that I've been able to get away with it the last couple of this season and part of last season because if they were to send someone over to me, by the time they finally figured out it's not allowed, the game's over.
Okay, yeah, that's because the cowbell definitely does bring some energy to the arena, especially, you know,
well,
I mean, in my opinion, go on, Brandon, go on.
In my opinion, honestly, I don't think the cowbell is going to be used that much this season anyways because how poorly they've been performing. So, you know, it's not really
that
big deal.
Yeah, but I think, like, even though the losing seasons, though, like, the cowbell still brought some energy. Like, in the Barclays Center, to me, it's a pretty dead arena. You look at some other arenas around the NBA, and they're loud. I was at a Nets-Wizards game, and the Wizards, even though they may not be the best team, that arena was louder than the Barclays Center during a Nets game. So I think the cowbell is very important.
Right, right. And the Barclays Center is a very dark arena. It's very black. It's drab. It's
lifeless, kind of, in a way.
Yeah.
The fans are all corporate. They're not really energetic.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. You know, I always find hockey slightly louder than basketball just because I think there's, you know, I always find the better lit the place, you know, the louder the fans tend to be.
Yeah. The Barclays Center is very, very dark arena. Only part of it that's lit up is pretty much the court,
Well, the Barclays Center is beautiful. I mean, there's no denying that, but it's almost like the fans really don't care, you know?
Yeah.
One of my friends calls it Darkness Center. You know, he used to score the games on paper. He can't even do it anymore because it's so dark up
yeah.
the upper level.
Yeah,
and
I could definitely understand why.
Safety hazard. First quarter to me, everyone I know plays a game called Try to Find Your Seat in the Dark Arena, and boy, I don't think anyone knows how to lose at that game.
So, yeah, you know, we can all agree on that. Barclays Center is very dark. Let's move on to this year's team. In terms of, obviously, record, very disappointing. I think all Nets fans can agree with that. Now, Cowbell Guy, what was your preseason prediction for the Nets record, regular season?
I actually at one point thought maybe they could break our old record of 52 wins if everyone was healthy. And it's, well, it's still possible. I don't see it happening. And yeah, I don't think Jason is really the right coach for this team. I find a veteran team, he's a veteran coach. And I had also this summer, I was like questioning if he was the right hire, because he obviously had no coaching experience, and we had just fired a guy who had coached in basketball for 35 years. And then when he said he was bringing in Lawrence Frank, I felt a little happier about it. But then now he's showed Lawrence the door, and he's basically doing daily reports till he gets a buyout.
Right, and to be completely honest, I totally agree with you. When I first heard about the Jason Kidd hire, I wasn't too thrilled, because at first I thought, you know, why are we bringing in a coach with no real coaching experience at all to coach a team that has players like, you know, Darren Williams and Joe Johnson, and eventually we got Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Jason Terry. And that just confused me even more, because why would you bring in a guy who's a young coach? I mean, he just retired from, you know, last season, and now they're going to bring in all these veteran players and leadership. Honestly, I think they did it because they didn't want to have the coach. They wanted to have the players coach, and that's why they have all these veteran players on their roster now, so that they can kind of coach themselves, and Jason Kidd would just learn from that. But clearly that hasn't been working.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I think, yeah. Go on.
It's come from the ownership. They're so concerned about continually one-upping the Knicks that they need the big-name coach. Like, you look at it, Mike Woodson, he's not a big-name coach, and he did an admirable job last year. Got the Knicks to, like, about, what was it, 54 wins, I believe. Pete Nicolosmo, not a big-name coach anymore. He's way past prime. But to me, I just need a guy who's going to get us to win. I don't care if his name is Phil Jackson or Larry Brown, you know, or if he's some guy I've never heard of. If he obviously can get the results, that's what I need. And Prokhorov is just a little too cares too much about how the team's image looks. And for years, the Nets have not had a good image. And I've always pointed out the best head coaches in Nets history were the guys who were not the big names. You know, Kevin Loggery, who brought us two championships in the 70s, he coached the 9-win Sixers before the Nets. That's his only experience. You know, he was the guy who knew how to be a leader, and Rod Thorne, who was assistant coach, was his play man. He would draw up all the plays. You know, it was a good coaching staff. And now with Kidd, like I just look at him and he looks lost. And now he's probably found his place a little more now in the last few weeks. But I just did not think he's going to be ready. And even if we make the playoffs, I don't see us advancing far.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Nets sitting at 8-15, third in the Atlantic Division. Not really much. Only one game better than the Knicks, and they're two games back from first place in the Atlantic Division. If you were Billy King, or if you were the general manager of the Nets right now at this point in the season, would you make a trade, or would you? I'm hearing some rumors about getting Lowry possibly for maybe Bojan Bogdanovic or a draft pick. Would you make a trade at this point in the season?
I don't know if it's really worth it. I think this team, if healthy, could go further. Like, I don't think we need Lowry. Jason Terry, when he returns, could really be of good help. And we have plenty of depth with Livingston and Taylor, and if we could get those three guys, you know, all to help back up Darren and Joe, we'll be great in the backcourt. You know, I don't want to fork over any more draft picks, because that's all we've been doing since Billy King came into the organization. I think King has done a decent job, you know, getting good players, but it's going to be a time when we're going to have to try to rebuild. It's going to be a long process so we can get some picks back.
Brandon, what do you think about this? What would you do if you were Billy King?
Well, to be completely honest, first of all, I would have never made this trade in the first place. So, I mean, there's
Pierce and KG, is that the trade you're talking about?
I would have never, ever made that trade, especially considering the hefty amount of draft picks that we had to give up in order to get three players who have two seasons left in them. We don't have our own first-round pick until 2019. Explain that to me. Why in the world would you ever trade away six draft picks for three players? Well, four,
because
if you count DJ
White.
Because
that's a stupid two-year plan that's not going to work.
Yeah, I really think Prokhorov forced the issue when he made that 5-year guarantee a few years back. I think you have to realize that this team is a few years removed from being 12-70. It takes time to build up a team.
I think even the 5-year plan was kind of like not even a really serious plan. It was more of motivation for them to win games and to win the
I think his goal is to win the championship within 5 years, but that's just not how it works. That's just not how the NBA works.
Well, this is the 5th year of Prokhorov's supposed 5-year plan, and to be completely honest, if it was just for Paul Pierce, or if it was just for him and Jason Terry, and it was maybe for 2 draft picks or something of that nature, I would have pulled that deal in a second, because Paul Pierce is a great player. He is a leader. He does deserve a first-round draft pick to be given away. But once you throw in Kevin Garnett, not saying he's a great player, because he is, and he has done pretty good things for us this season, I still wouldn't take that deal because of the draft pick. And even if this did work out this year, even if we did go to the Eastern Conference Finals, or even if we did win the finals, I would rather us see a good team for the next 10 years than see an overpaid roster for the next 2, and then have us tank for the next 8.
All right, now just very quickly, we have a phone call right now. Let me pick that up.
John.
Well, who is this?
It's Nick.
Okay, it's Nick. Nick from Upper Saddle River. Nick, what is your question for Cowboy Guy?
I'm always on the show. Well, I just wanted to say that I agree with Nick Cowboy Guy. The only reason why the Nets brought in Jason Kidd was so they can get a big name. That's why they wanted to get rid of P.J. Carlesimo. They didn't even care about how good of a coach they were going to be. They just wanted a big name. That's the only reason why. And the truth is, that trade was totally not worth it at all, because Paul Pierce has been a bum. Garnett hasn't been special. And Jason Terry, he's just a mediocre player at this point. So I just don't understand their logic. The Nets, I'm going to be honest, the Nets are totally screwed right now, and there's no coaching. They have potential, but at this point, they're screwed. I think they're going to make the playoffs, but they're still pretty screwed.
All right. Thank you, Nick, for your call.
Okay.
It's just looking at it now, I think that in my mind, that 5-year plan from Prokhorov is really what messed it up, because he is the owner. He made that guarantee. All right, let's move on to another topic. Yeah?
It took 3 years to make the playoffs. Just got to point that out. You know, we went through our whole era in Newark without making the playoffs.
Yeah. And last year, making only the first round, taking the Bulls to Game 7, I was not disappointed, I'll be honest, because that team last year was just not really a second-round team. I think if they kept PJ, they'd be a much better team. All right, let's move on to a new topic now. Cowboy Guy, who would you say your favorite all-time net is?
Of the ones I've seen play live, I've always liked Terrence Williams' athleticism, Joe Green. I'd probably put it at Richard Jefferson, because, you know, he was a guy that came as a net. He became good because of Jason Kidd. And, in fact, a lot of my customized jerseys, I wear 24 for him, in addition to Ricky Henderson for when I go to baseball games, because I've always respected those two players so much. I remember Richard Jefferson was really upset the Nets traded him.
Yeah. It was like the opposite of when Jason Kidd was traded. I remember Jason Kidd was complaining about migraines or something along the lines of that, and he wanted to leave. RJ, he did not. He liked being a Net. Brandon, who do you think your favorite Net is of all time?
Well, for me, it would most likely have to be either Jason Kidd or Vince Carter, because I remember going to the Nets games as a little kid, and I always used to have my little Vince Carter jersey on, and I always used to point him out, and I just love watching him play. He was an absolute machine on the offensive end of the floor. He was an acrobat. He flew. It was unbelievable to watch him play, and just to look back and see the things he did on and off the floor is just incredible for this team. You gotta love and respect Vince Carter.
Yeah, and personally for me, my favorite Nets player of all time has to be, without a doubt, Kenyon Martin. I know he's in the Knicks now, but obviously I don't root for the Knicks, but I want him to do well. He's a nice guy. I actually met him a few times. Great player. He was so fun to watch with Kidd and RJ, that championship team. We used to go to a lot. We actually went to some games in the finals back then against the Lakers and the Spurs. And stiff, very fun player to watch, high energy, drafted by the Nets in 2000s.
That's the kind of team you got to put together. That's exactly the kind of team you got to put together.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just throw five people into a starting lineup.
Jason Kidd. Darren Williams, want him to be another Jason Kidd to turn everything around. He doesn't have that ability.
Right.
I agree with that.
In retrospect, it does all fall on Darren Williams. Darren Williams is, in fact, the leader of this team, and wherever he goes, the Nets will follow with him. And I don't think it should be that much of an issue if he does stay healthy, because him and Brook Lopez have tremendous chemistry. You always have Joe Johnson, who's a great spot-up shooter and can really play offense well, and he's a great defensive effort. And obviously Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, they just kind of do their own thing, and, you know, if they're doing good, they're doing good. And I think this could work. Everyone's
all right, just a reminder, we have...
Solution.
Go on.
It's like almost a two-year window, because I think you could replace Garnett, you could replace Pierce, but, you know, Darren's going to get older, so will Joe. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, maybe next 3 years, if we're lucky, we can make the playoffs, but I don't think, you know, Darren's a real long-term solution.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, just a reminder, we have just over 13 minutes to go in the show. If you have any questions for the one and only Nets Cowbell guy, we have him on air right now. That number to call in is 347-884-8496. Once again, 347-884-8496. We're talking Nets. We're talking basketball. We have Cowbell guy on right now. So we've basically been talking about, you know, what this team has been doing wrong. What do you think any bright spots of this team? What do you see they're doing right, Cowbell guy?
Plumlee, I think, is a very bright spot. I think he's becoming very good. I actually was saying when I was at the Nets Clippers game that he was probably the best guy on the court to defend against DeAndre Jordan. Him and Reggie should have at one point just played pure defense against those two. And I think Kidd should start using Reggie a little more, like even late in the games or just when you need someone to grab rebounds, because Lopez makes next to no effort again. Like I count like at least 10 rebounds a game he could grab if he were to move a few feet, which he never does. I like Livingston. I think, you know, his build is very helpful when he goes down court. Tyshawn, I think, has potential if he could see more playing time. I think Lopez, if he could start playing better in the fourth quarter, could even be better. But it seems to me a lot of times after the first quarter, he doesn't always produce as much.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is, I don't know why, but I noticed that the Nets tend to go away from Lopez sometimes for longer periods of times than they should. I know they have to mix it up a little, but I'd like to see Lopez get the ball more consistently instead of a lot early on and then a lot at another point in the game and then no other times. So I think that's coaching too. Brandon, what are you going to say?
No, man, I wasn't going to say anything. Okay.
So once again, just call in 347-884-8496. We have Nets Cowbell guy on. We're talking Nets, and we have 11 minutes to go on the show. We can go back to the Nets in a little, but one thing requested by Nets Cowbell guy to talk about was the Newark Bears reportedly possibly going to fold. They left the Can-Am League, and I remember I've been to a few Bears games, and my memories of the Bears are, you know, the crowd is just, not enough people go to the games, and I just don't think they did a great job promoting it, because they had Ricky Henderson at one point. They had some good, exciting players to watch, but obviously, Cowboy guy, you're a big Bears fan. What do you have to say about this?
To me, I saw it coming. I remember I would go to a Jackals game or up to Rockland where I saw you once, and I just remember, like, they somehow get crowds there. And to me, the Bears, they're a very well-located team. They're right off the Newark Light Rail. You can walk from Penn Station if you want to, right by the Broad Street Station in Newark. And it's a shame that there's a very big lack of marketing, which caused the team to get kicked out of the Can-Am League again. I don't see any possible season for them next year, and I think if teams that sit out at least one season generally never return a year after.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because they are located in a great spot, and I go to a lot of Boulders games as well, and what they do very well is they get into the community and they promote it. And I think the Bears, they try to promote people from, like, this area. I think they have a ton of people. They're located in a city. So if you can get people just to go to games, even give out free tickets, whatever, fill the stands, get people interested in it, that would be big. So if you were the Bears ownership,
Well, they've had games where they've had a lot of discounts. Now, if I was the ownership, I would just try to market, at least within Newark, you know, try to work with some local businesses, like in exchange for free Bear signage in your pizzeria or in your barbershop. You know, we will give you 2 season tickets, and we'll send someone every couple weeks to, like, put up different signage of upcoming events. I would go around Newark Penn Station, and I would sometimes see some Devils ads, see some ads for the Nets when they were back in Newark. To me, like, I knew the Newark Bears existed until I started going. I've seen no ads for them. One minor league executive, who I'm not going to name, when he once asked me, like, the Bears still exist? You know, he was shocked because he never sees any ads for them. And, you know, it was something that I saw coming for almost 2 years now. And that's why I made sure to go up to Rockland the last game because I knew that would be it for them. And I even somehow acquired the dugout chart from the very last game.
Yeah, I was. That's when I saw you, right? Was that at the Boulders? Or
I think I saw you the day before when they had that guy Min Her pitching for the.
That was interesting. They signed. For those of you who don't know, they signed a. He's almost a billionaire. He's from South Korea. The Rockland Boulders signed him to a very short contract. He learned how to pitch a knuckleball from Phil Niekro, I think it was, and they signed him, and he did all right, actually, but the Bears did win, and I did see Cavill guy.
I was sitting right next to the Bears dugout, and I remember they were joking that he might throw too slow and get picked up by the radar gun. I thought, actually, after the first 2 innings, he pitched much better. I met him because I was hanging out in the Bears locker room the next day, and he was, like, outside at one point. And he's a very nice guy, Min Her. It's a shame because I know I met so many nice people at Bears games. A lot of us try to go to the Jackals, to the Boulders, root for them on the road. Yeah, a good amount of loyal fans, but, you know, it wasn't enough to sustain a team. And maybe they'll try to join some collegiate league, but fortunately, you know, I feel very bad for the fans. Some of the staff members who are no longer going to be employed.
Like
continual mismanagement. Like, 1 week they had this guy's assistant GM, 2 weeks later he was gone.
Yeah, it is sad because not only is it going to affect the fans, but it's going to affect the economy in Newark. And, you know, these people, you know, it was their job, so it's tough for them. We have a call right now. Let's see who it is.
Is it Mike from Queens?
Hi, who is this?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, hi. This is Scott from Poughkeepsie. How are you?
Good, Scott from Poughkeepsie. You have a question for Cowboy Guy?
I do. Would it be possible to jump back to the Nets for a second?
Yes.
Just a quick one. You're a pretty big influence at Nets games. The Cowbell is just, you know, an awesome idea. What was the reasoning for it? Who kind of came up with that idea? Was it you? Was it some of your friends? Or, you know, was it from a previous, you know, experience that you decided to use a cowbell?
I always wanted, like, some type of noisemaker to be a little louder because I felt that clapping wasn't loud enough. And I just figured a cowbell seemed easy enough to learn how to play, and it was easy enough to carry around in a bag.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Scott from Poughkeepsie. And we have another call. Hello, who is this?
Hey, what's up, John? It's Jordan.
Hey, Jordan, you have a question for Cowboy Guy.
Yes. I was wondering what your opinion of Billy King as the general manager was. Ever since he joined the team and he made those moves of signing Travis Outlaw, Troy Murphy, Johan Petro, I've had mixed feelings about him. So I was wondering what your take was on him.
Roz Korn was the one who signed Outlaw, Petro, and Morrow. Billy King was the one who, if I remember correctly, signed Stephen Graham and traded for Troy Murphy. Stephen Graham, to me, was one of the worst moves by him. I think, you know, he did for a while. I thought he was doing a good job. Then he got caught up too much in the melodrama, which just completely sidetracked everything. And I find him he doesn't like stand up at times. Because he was saying how ownership fired Avery, and I do not believe he fired Avery.
And he also, I think he was the one who did not fire Carlos Smith. I think he should have stood up for ownership, to ownership, and said that PJ is the right coach going forward. I think he's very good at landing star players, and I was amazed he dumped Petro and a few other guys to get Joe Johnson, but I think he's forked over a lot recently in the deal with the Celtics. And I think if we don't go far in the playoffs, I think he's got to be the one to go.
Well,
One
thing I've noticed with Billy King is one thing I don't like about him is he tends to get involved too much, like this year with the Kyle Lowry rumors, last year Josh Smith rumors, and he tends to get involved and then doesn't go through with a lot of things. So it's kind of served more of a distraction.
I don't remember many Josh Smith rumors, but a lot of times not all the rumors are true. Like, a lot of times these media guys, they try to make it up to get attention to their site, and their sites will make money off different advertising that are on there. I don't blame him for trying to do a trade, because the Nets have historically never been able to make great big signings. You know, they were shunned by LeBron, Bosch, Wade, Amari, not that I even wanted him. You know, like, when you think that the best free agent class in 2010, you walked away with Outlaw, Morrow, Farmar, and Petro, like, I happen to think the trade route is a good way to take, but I don't know. I think the melodrama was too much of a distraction, and so were the Dwight Howard rumors. But I don't know. I think Kyle Lowry ones are not as distracting, but I think we have other issues, like the problem with Kidd and Frank. I think he actually should step in and tell Kidd that, you know, he should apologize to Frank and realize that he's there to help him, not push him out the door.
All right.
So we have 2 minutes left in the show. Thank you, Jordan, for your call.
So Cowbell guy, final thoughts. How do you think the Nets are going to fit for the rest of the season?
Well, I think if they could get hot, I think they'll have they might be able to win the division and end with the 4 seed. But the way that division's playing, I wouldn't be surprised they end up with like 44 wins.
Do you think the Nets most likely will make the playoffs? Do you think that they will advance past the first round?
Depends on who they play. I don't know. I think a rookie coach in his first time in the playoffs, you know, without a head coach who's been to the playoffs, I don't think they'll have much luck in the first round, unless the team's incredibly hot and is on an amazing winning streak.
Well, that's what we have to hope for.
You never know. John, what do you think?
I'll be honest. I think they will make the playoffs just because the Atlantic Division is so, so weak. And like I said a few shows ago, I predicted this team to go 64-18, and clearly I'm very wrong with that prediction. But I think if they can get to 40-something wins, they'll be able to make the playoffs. In terms of second round, I really don't think so, because they'll probably get the 4th seed, which means they're still going to be playing the 5 seed, which is going to be a pretty good team.
Probably have a better record because the one division winner has to be in the top 4. So
yeah. Well, if the Nets win the Atlantic, they'll probably be the 4 seed.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, so we have 20 seconds to go on the show. I just want to thank you, Nets Cowboy Guy, the one and only Nets Cowboy Guy, for being on our show today. Thank you for calling in, for the few people that called in. Thanks for listening.
All right. You can catch Nets Cowboy Guy in section, what was your section again?
220 this year. I'm in 220.
You
You can catch Nets Cowboy Guy in section 220 of the Barclays Center. All right, thanks for tuning in, guys.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Cowboy Guy.